Chapter 7. Behind the scenes. An issuing from and leaving open the door of the inner room, Mr. Crampton had bestowed upon Mr. Perkins a look so peculiarly arch, that even he, simple as he was, began to imagine that some mystery was about to be cleared up, or some mighty matter to be discussed. Presently he heard the well-known voice of Lady Gorgon in conversation with his uncle. What could their talk be about? Mr. Perkins was dying to know, and shall we say it? Advanced to the door on tiptoe, and listened with all his might. Her ladyship, that Juno of a woman, if as he had not borrowed Venus's girdle to render herself irresistible, at least had adopted a tender, coaxing, wheedling, frisky tone, quite different from her ordinary dignified style of conversation. She called Mr. Crampton a naughty man, for neglecting his old friends, vowed that Sir George was quite hurt at his not coming to dine nor fixing a day when he would come, and added, with a most engaging ogle, that as he had three fine girls at home, who would perhaps make an evening pass pleasantly, even to such a gay bachelor as Mr. Crampton. Madam, said he, with much gravity, the daughters of such a mother must be charming. But I, who have seen your ladyship, am, alas, proof against even them. Both parties here heaved tremendous sighs, and affected to be wonderfully unhappy about something. I wish, after a pause, said Lady Gorgon, wish, dear Mr. Crampton, you would not use that odious title, my ladyship. You know it always makes me melancholy. Melancholy, my dear Lady Gorgon, and why? Because it makes me think of another title that ought to have been mine hours. I speak for dear Sir George's and my darling boy's sake, heaven knows, not mine. What a sad disappointment it has been to my husband, that after all his services, all the promises he has had, they have never given him his peerage. As for me, you know, for you, my dear madam, I know quite well, that you care for no such bauble as a coronet, except in so far as it may confer honor upon those most dear to you, excellent wife, and noble mother as you are. Hago! What a happy man is Sir George! Here there was another pause, and if Mr. Perkins could have seen what was taking place behind the screen, he would have beheld little Mr. Crampton looking into Lady Gorgon's face, with as lovesick a Romeo gaze as he could possibly counterfeit, while her ladyship, blushing somewhat and turning her own gray gogglers up to heaven, received all his words for gospel, and sat fancying herself to be the best, most meritorious, and most beautiful creature in the three kingdoms. You men are terrible flatterers, continued she, but you say right. For myself I value not these empty distinctions. I am growing old, Mr. Crampton, yes, indeed, I am, although you smile so incredulously, and let me add, that my thoughts are fixed upon higher things than earthly crowns. But tell me, you who are all in all with Lord Bagwig, are we never to have our peerage? His Majesty, I know, is not averse the services of dear Sir George to a member of His Majesty's august family, I know, have been appreciated in the highest quarter. Ever since the peace we have had a promise. £400 has Sir George spent at the Herald's office. I myself am of one of the most ancient families in the kingdom, Mr. Crampton, and the poor dear man's health is really ruined by the anxious sickening feeling of hope so long delayed. Mr. Crampton now assumed an air of much solemnity. My dear Lady Gorgon, said he, will you let me be frank with you, and will you promise solemnly that what I am going to tell you shall never be repeated to a single soul? Lady Gorgon promised. Well then, since the truth you must know, you yourselves have been in part the cause of the delay of which you complain. You gave us 2 votes 5 years ago, you now only give us one. If Sir George were to go up to the peers, we should lose, even that one vote, and would it be common sense in us to incur such a loss? Mr. Scully, the Liberal, would return another member of his own way of thinking, and as for the Lords, we have, you know, a majority there. Oh, that horrid man, said Lady Gorgon, cursing Mr. Scully in her heart, and beginning to play a rapid tattoo with her feet. That miscreant, that traitor, that attorney has been our ruin. Horrid man, if you please, but give me leave to tell you that the horrid man is not the sole cause of your ruin, if ruin you will call it. I am sorry to say that I do candidly think ministers believe that Sir George Gorgon has lost his influence in Oldborough as much through his own fault as through Mr. Scully's cleverness. Our own fault? Good heavens! Have we not done everything that persons of our station in the county could do to keep those misguided men? Have we not remonstrated, threatened, taken away our custom from the mayor, established a conservative apothecary in fact, done all that gentlemen could do? But these are such times, Mr. Crampton. The spirit of revolution is abroad, and the great families of England are menaced by democratic insolence. This was Sir George Gorgon's speech always after dinner, and was delivered by his lady with a great deal of stateliness. Somewhat, perhaps, to her annoyance, Mr. Crampton only smiled, shook his head, and said, "Nonsense, my dear Lady Gorgon, pardon the phrase, but I am a plain old man, and call things by their names. Now, will you let me whisper in your ear one word of truth? You have tried all sorts of remonstrances, and exerted yourself to maintain your influence in every way, except the right one, and that is, what, in heaven's name? Conciliation. We know your situation in the borough, Mr. Scully's whole history, and, pardon me for saying so, but we men in office know everything. Yours, Lady Gorgon's ears and cheeks now assumed the hottest hue of crimson. She thought of her former passages with Scully, and of the days when, but never mind when. For she suffered her veil to fall, and buried her head in the folds of her handkerchief. Vain folds! The wily little Mr. Crampton could see all that passed behind the cambric, and continued, "Yes, madam, we know the absurd hopes that were formed by a certain attorney 20 years since. We know how, up to this moment, he boasts of certain walks with the governess. We were always with the governess," shrieked out Lady Gorgon, clasping her hands. "He was not the wisest of women." "With the governess, of course," said Mr. Crampton, firmly. "Oh, you suppose that any man dare breathe a syllable against your spotless reputation? Never, my dear madam. But what I would urge, is this: you have treated your disappointed admirer too cruelly." "What, the traitor who has robbed us of our rights?" "He never would have robbed you of your rights, if you had been more kind to him. You should be gentle, madam. You should forgive him. You should be friends with him." "With a traitor, never." "Think what made him a traitor, Lady Gorgon. Look in your glass, and say if there be not some excuse for him. Think of the feelings of the man who saw beauty such as yours. I am a plain man, and must speak virtue such as yours, in the possession of a rival. By heavens, madam, I think he was right to hate Sir George Gorgon. Would you have him allow such a prize to be ravished from him without a pang on his part?" "He was, I believe, very much attached to me," said Lady Gorgon, quite delighted. "But you must be aware that a young man of his station in life could not look up to a person of my rank." "Surely not. It was monstrous pride and arrogance in Mr. Scully. But cave all his vows? Such is the world's way. Scully could not help loving you. Who that knows you can? I am a plain man, and say what I think. He loves you still. Why make an enemy of him, who would at a word be at your feet? Dearest Lady Gorgon, listen to me. Sir George Gorgon and Mr. Scully have already met. Their meeting was our contrivance. It is for our interest, for yours, that they should be friends. If there were 2 ministerial members for Oldborough, do you think your husband's peerage would be less secure? I am not at liberty to tell you all I know on this subject, but do, I entreat you, be reconciled to him." And after a little more conversation, which was carried on by Mr. Crampton in the same tender way, this important interview closed, and Lady Gorgon, folding her shawl round her, threaded certain mysterious passages, and found her way to her carriage in Whitehall. "I hope you have not been listening, you rogue?" said Mr. Crampton to his nephew, who blushed most absurdly by way of answer. Who would have heard great state secrets, if you had dared to do so? That woman is perpetually here, and if peerages are to be had for the asking, she ought to have been a duchess by this time. I would not have admitted her, but for a reason that I have. Go you now, and ponder upon what you have heard and seen. Be on good terms with Scully, and, above all, speak not a word concerning our interview, no, not a word even to your mistress. By the way, I presume, sir, you will recall your resignation? The bewildered Perkins was about to stammer out a speech, when his uncle, cutting it short, pushed him gently out of the door. Asterisk, 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 at the period, when the important events occurred which have been recorded here, parties ran very high, and a mighty struggle for the vacant speakership was about to come on. The Right Honorable Robert Pincher was the ministerial candidate, and Sir Charles Macabaw was patronized by the opposition. The two members for Oldborough of course took different sides, the baronet being of the Pincher faction, while Mr. William Pitt Scully strongly supported the Macabaw party. It was Mr. Scully's intention to deliver an impromptu speech upon the occasion of the election, and he and his faithful Perkins prepared it between them. For the latter gentleman had wisely kept his uncle's counsel, and his own, and Mr. Scully was quite ignorant of the conspiracy that was brooding. Indeed, so artfully had that young machiavel of a Perkins conducted himself, that when asked by his patron whether he had given up his place in the tape and sealing wax office, he replied that he had tendered his resignation, but did not say one word about having recalled it. You were right, my boy, quite right, said Mr. Scully. Man of uncompromising principles should make no compromise. And herewith he sat down, and wrote off a couple of letters, one to Mr. Hawksby, telling him that the place in the sealing wax office was, as he had reason to know, vacant, and the other to his nephew, stating that it was to be his. Dur the rose, my dear Bob, added Mr. Scully, it will cost you £500, but you cannot invest your money better. It is needless to state that the affair was to be conducted with the strictest secrecy and honor, and that the money was to pass through Mr. Scully's hands. While, however, the great Pincher and Macabaw question was yet undecided, an event occurred to Mr. Scully, which had a great influence upon his after life. A second grand banquet was given at the Earl of Mantrap's. Lady Mantrap requested him to conduct Lady Gorgon to dinner, and the latter, with a charming timidity, and a gracious melancholy look into his face, after which her veined eyelids veiled her azure eyes, put her hand into the trembling one of Mr. Scully, and said as much as looks could say, forgive and forget. Down went Scully to dinner. There were dukes on his right hand and earls on his left. There were but two persons without title in the midst of that glittering assemblage. The very servants looked like noblemen. The cook had done wonders. The wines were cool and rich, and Lady Gorgon was splendid. What attention did everybody pay to her and to him? Why would she go on gazing into his face with that tender, imploring look? In other words, Scully, after partaking of soup and fish, he, during their discussion, had been thinking over all the former love and hate passages between himself and Lady Gorgon, turned very red, and began talking to her. Were you not at the opera on Tuesday? Began he, assuming at once the airs of a man of fashion. Thought I caught a glimpse of you in the Duchess of Diddlebury's box. Opera, Mr. Scully? Pronouncing the word, Cully with the utmost softness, H, no. We seldom go, and yet too often. For serious persons the enchantments of that place are too dangerous. I am so nervous, so delicate. The smallest trifle so agitates, depresses, or irritates me, that I dare not yield myself up to the excitement of music. I am too passionately attached to it, and, shall I tell you, it has such a strange influence upon me, that the smallest false note almost drives me to distraction, and for that very reason I hardly ever go to a concert or a ball. Egad, thought Scully, I recollect when she would dance down the matter of 45 couple, and jingle away at the Battle of Prague all day. She continued. Auntie recollect, I do, with oh, what regret. That day at Oldborough Race Ball, when I behaved with such sad rudeness to you. You will scarcely believe me, and yet I assure you 'tis the fact, the music had made me almost mad. Do let me ask your pardon for my conduct. I was not myself. Oh, Mr. Scully, I am no worldly woman. I know my duties, and I feel my wrongs. Nights and days have I lain awake weeping and thinking of that unhappy day, that I should ever speak so to an old friend. For we were old friends, were we not? Scully did not speak, but his eyes were bursting out of his head, and his face was the exact color of a deputy lieutenant's uniform. That I should ever forget myself and you so. How I have been longing for this opportunity, to ask you to forgive me. I asked Lady Mantrap, when I heard you were to be here, to invite me to her party. Come, I know you will forgive me or I say you will. You used to look, so in old days, and forgive me my caprices then. Do give me a little wine we will drink to the memory of old days. Her eyes filled with tears, and poor Scully's hand caused such a rattling and trembling of the glass and the decanter, that the Duke of Doldrum who had been, during the course of this whispered sentimentality, describing a famous run with the Queen's hounds at the top of his voice stopped at the jingling of the glass, and his tale was lost forever. Scully hastily drank his wine, and Lady Gorgon turned round to her next neighbor, a little gentleman in black, between whom and herself certain conscious looks passed. I am glad poor Sir George is not here, said he, smiling. Lady Gorgon said, pooh, for shame. The little gentleman was no other than Josiah Crampton Esquire, that eminent financier, and he was now going through the curious calculation before mentioned. By Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.